Tuesday, February the 8th, was a full dramatic day. Part of my mind was halfway across the world. Val Linden was in Hawaii with General Key. But it was a full day here, too, that began at 7, because I had to have a hairdo. After Alice Brown and I had had our delicious swim last night, she was up here for the meeting of the Kennedy Cultural Center. She was my house guest. A little after 9:30, I was down in the theater, where we were serving coffee and donuts and seeing slides to indoctrinate all of us. The day-long tour of Washington, us being the Beautification Speakers Bureau. There were cabinet wives, Mrs. John Connor, and Trudy Fowler, and Jane Freeman, Margie McNamara. She does so much, like in the old hymn, where courage calls her duty, be never wanting there. And Lee Udall, whose husband really put the tiger in the tank, the whole beautification project, is a pretty and effective speaker. And our latest recruit, Mrs. Robert Weaver. And then from the Senate, we had pretty little Mrs. Birch Bayh, smooth, competent Mrs. John Sherman Cooper, Ethene Church, who's already made quite a few speeches, Emily Douglas, and Mrs. Lee Metcalf, Patsy Derby and Cynthia Wilton might speak to youth groups, so they spent the day with us, and Sharon Francis, who writes all the wonderful letters, and of course, the backbone of the whole thing, Nash Castro, and Walter Washington, whose accent is always on people, people, people. The public housing and the schools are his fort. Katie Lockheim and Polly Shackleton were with us, and a couple of newspaper women for whom this would serve as good background. Then we all got on the bus and for the next 5 hours drove past the things that had been achieved, the things that were planned, with Nash as narrator. One of the most dramatic things, of course, planting along Pennsylvania Avenue heading for Anacostia, where 400 magnolia solangiana trees and 1,000 azaleas are going to make a magnificent entrance into the Capitol along a route where about 50,000 people come in every day. We stopped at the Kentucky Court Public Housing Development and got out to see what the Georgetown Garden Club had done with their very attractive courtyard. The plants were good, but the community spirit was even better. About 2/3 of the residents were elderly citizens, and they all swarmed around us, everybody ready to tell his story of how they'd enjoyed and participated in the planting. As we drove along New York Avenue, Mr. Dana Wallace of the district government told us about the beautification plans for it, one part of which certainly shook me up. In order to make it a 6-lane highway through a fairly long stretch, they're going to have to sacrifice a great number of full-grown trees. This makes me very uneasy. Do we know what's happening? Are we on top of anything? My favorite stop of the day was Walker Jones School. This is one of the 9 schools that we have landscaped. We went into the lobby, and Mrs. Wilhelmina Thomas, the principal, met us. Walls were full of the posters with which by now I am happily familiar. A terrarium full of plants which they had presented to me in the dedication ceremony last December, which I had given back to them for use by the science class. The children here are from the 1st through the 6th grades, and Mrs. Thomas and 2 faculty members, Mrs. Barbara Mims and Mrs. Sylvia Shugrew, the science teacher, told us all the ways in which they had involved the children and the families in the neighborhood. The English teacher had taught them the names of plants and flowers and tools to increase their vocabulary and acquaintance. They had made the posters. They'd all written themes about it. And the science teacher had taught them about how plants grow, what happens. And they were having experiments with the terrarium and had bus trips planned for the botanical gardens and the arboretum. They loved their work, and the enthusiasm was contagious. They talked about what it had meant in reduction of vandalism. As we left, the windows were lined with schoolchildren. I hope they saw me waving. Lunch was at Haynes Point. But first, we had a slide presentation of the National Capitol landscape, done by the National Park Service and shown to busloads of schoolchildren who come to visit in the spring and summer. This tiny tea house is the visitor center for the millions of tourists who come to Washington. I thought I saw that White House touch in the lunch. The paper placemats were bright with flowers. There was a daisy on top of each box and charming flower centerpieces. Trudy had brought a good cake and somebody had brought wine. Mary Lasker joined us at lunch. She had arranged to have a very famous British landscape architect, Mr. Donald Page, come along for the trip, and especially to see Haynes Point, for which he hoped he would do some sketches for the 1,200 cherry trees that we're going to plant around it. It's actually my almost favorite of all the projects. After lunch, we had a question and answer session. I told everybody I would send them the book containing everything that happened at the conference on natural beauty last May. Sharon asked everybody when they came back from a speaking tour to bring any choice anecdotes or vignettes so that we could sort of put them in the pot for each of us to use. And then we were on our way home, arriving at the White House about 3, having dropped off Mary at the airport. I was just in time for a cup of coffee in the dining room. Since he arrived Saturday night, they've had a very quiet time. He's handsome, mature, engaging. Last night, when he and Alice got to talking about the relative merits of hotels around the world, especially in Portugal and Spain, Brenda and I sat silent, almost as though we were listening to a conversation in Chinese. Spent the rest of the afternoon on little jobs, dictating, signing mail, a picture with Congressman John Jarman in the diplomatic reception room, a talk with Lucy, and then all dressed up and excited at going out, and at the same time already lonely to be saying goodbye to Linda, because she would go straight from the party to the plane, and I would not want to walk into her room again for days and days. I rode with to the discotheque. It was quite an experience. Up some dark stairs to a room where you practically needed someone to lead you by the hand. There were the dimmest of red-shaded lamps at tiny round tables, and the red walls were covered with a weird assortment of avant-garde pictures and drawings. The whole atmosphere was intimate and cozy. The music loud, the room soon crowded, and there was a small screen which every now and then gave forth a movie about 12 minutes long. It had a vague French flavor. Nancy, in the shortest time, had gathered together the most attractive guest list. Connors from the cabinet, the Tahereh Parises, the Venezuelan ambassador, and the very decorative young Al Gusains of the Kuwait embassy, and the bachelor Algerian Ambassador Gilal, who now lives in the Elms. Linda's old campaigning friends, the Birch Byes, were there, and the Fred Harrises from the Senate. I had a good chat with Jack Brooks. The filing date is just over in Texas, and he doesn't have an opponent. And Albert Thomas has two. What a cruel thing. And Linda's almost best friend, Warren Woodward. Nancy was beautiful and lived up to the speculation stories that I've been reading in the papers lately, that she's going to be on the best dress list very soon. We talked about her new house, Marywood, that the Auchincloss's used to own. Since we first met her, not so many years ago, she's achieved so many things. Success in her own profession, a delightful husband, and 4 children. 3 were his by his first wife. And she's prettier with every passing year. I hadn't seen the Horace Busbys since he left us. They've bought a house way out in Virginia, almost 200 years old, and were so excited telling about it. The Jim Symingtons were there. Linda had campaigned with them. And I was so glad Nancy had asked Diana and Donald. The Carpenters came by briefly, and Marta and Stu were happily telling everybody that when and if he got out of law school and passed the bar, he'd be Tom Clark's law clerk up at the Supreme Court. I stayed a couple of hours. It was so different, it was very interesting. And then kissed Linda goodbye and left with Pat and Lucy to arrive home and eat cornflakes on the kitchen table all by myself. Lucy came in, she dropped off Pat at class. We had a long talk. She's very fond of psychoanalyzing Linda, me, and all those close to her. Actually, she has quite an intuitive quality. And then I was in bed by 11. Muriel called. I turned on the TV. There was Air Force One on the ground in Los Angeles. The vice president had gone inside to talk to Lyndon. He was to emerge presently and talk to the press in an airplane hangar sort of a room. But the conference inside went on, and meanwhile, victors with their placards marched back and forth in front of the camera, denouncing our presence in Vietnam and getting far more time on nationwide TV than their few dozen members deserved. I groaned because I knew Lyndon inside the plane had to have a conference with Hubert and all the people that were going out to Saigon, John Gardner, Orville Freeman, Mac George Bundy. And yet it gave these picketers a forum. It set the stage for them. Well, I guess it's unavoidable when you're landing at Los Angeles. It was about 20 of one when Lyndon came down the ramp of the plane, went into the hangar. There was a brief report on his trip. And then he was to fly on to Washington. At 1 o'clock, I turned out the light, realizing that in 5 hours he would be walking into the room. So swift is this world. There'd been a couple of little pieces in the paper today about Linda Bird getting all A's, 5 of them, and Lucy getting B's, of course mentioning that she dropped her chemistry course. Considering all the slings and arrows lately, I appreciated the bouquet.